Case number one.
I think we jump right into case six, because that's the only, that's the first case in which we have both parties, case six.
Oh, thank you. Case number six, 23-487R. Could you come forward? Issuing authority, are you ready to make a statement?
I am. I'll be brief. I will say that...
I'm sorry. We need names, don't we?
Yeah. Spellings.
Sorry. Evan Fisher, on behalf of the Department of Emergency Services and Public Protection.
And your witness?
Officer Ryan Van Overloop, on behalf of the East Line Police Department.
Could you spell your name, please?
Yep. Van Overloop, VanOverloop.
Thank you.
So this matter is one that focuses on the issue of suitability, and we look at it through the lens that is the final Vermiglio case. The two factors that are present in Vermiglio are going to be present in this matter. First and foremost, we've got inaccurate or incomplete application material submitted by the applicant. But perhaps a greater concern is an incident that we'll present testimony about today that shows a serious lapse of judgment. And harkening back to Sarno, one incident that shows a unsafe handling of a firearm and a lapse of judgment and the use or handling of a firearm is sufficient to deny or revoke the permit. And we hope that the board will agree today that that is the case here.
Would you like to make a brief opening statement?
I would just say made a mistake only on my pistol permit for about not even 2 years. With the current climax going on, I was nervous seeing cops in the rear view, and my firearm ended up being out of my possession. After it happened.
You don't need to make your whole case now, just a brief statement of what. Okay, thank you. Issuing authority?
And we'll go straight to the first witness. We'll call Officer Van Overloop. Sir, for the record, can you state your name and your occupation?
Yeah, Officer Ryan Van Overloop, VanOverloop, police officer with the town of East Lyme, approximately 4.5 years. Prior to that service, I started at the Ledger Police Department in Connecticut as well. Basic training through the police academy, 800 plus hours, continued on the field training. Beyond that, I've done a lot of training in narcotics work, motor vehicle stops. Further training has gone into firearm training with being a member of our regional special response team in southeastern Connecticut. Special response team deals with high priority warrant service, situations such where you need extra manpower and people with higher training, specifically in the use of firearms. So I have a lot of use of firearms training. We train monthly with dealing with firearms, rifles, and pistols. So it's kind of the extent of my.
Now, let me just ask you to clarify a little bit of that. 4.5 years of experience, does that include your time at the Ledger PD or is that just East Lyme?
4.5 just at East Lyme, about a little over 6 total.
So 6 years total.
Correct.
as an officer. Thank you for your service, sir. I want to go in just, you gave us a good overview of some of your training experience, your prior law enforcement experience. What assignments have you had, shifts, duties, in your 6 years?
By typical shift, I guess my typical day-to-day is I'm an evening shift, so that's an afternoon shift, anywhere from typically around 4 to about 1 a.m. I'm a typical patrolman. Field calls for service on a day-to-day in and out when time allows. Paperwork and fielding call for service. I like to stay active. I conduct more vehicle stops. It's kind of like the criminal interdiction thing, looking for, you know, finding illegal things on the roads or in the vehicles. And then, again, like I go back to a lot of what I do, actually, is considered, I've been to SWAT school, which has got me into my SRT team that I'm a part of. So I do a lot of extra training when it comes to that, with firearms, building clearing, on the range.
So let me ask you just a little bit more about firearm safety. Are you familiar with the requirements that a pistol permit applicant has to go through to acquire a pistol permit in Connecticut?
Correct. So do you, you have your NRA class, you have in there, there's a lot of obviously safety measures that are taken into place of understanding the safety. There's new laws in Connecticut too, the law after the child for them, the shoreline. I know, so safe storage of firearms is very important in the state, obviously it should be anywhere. And then the safety of properly discharging a firearm, where to discharge a firearm, your background of where you're discharging a firearm, safety storage on your person if you're carrying your firearm.
Thank you. And then, have you ever encountered the applicant before as part of your official duties?
I have not till that evening.
No, before today.
Oh, yes, sorry. yes, just the one evening on, let's go back to August 26th.
Okay.
2022.
I do want to ask you some questions about what happened on August 26th. On that date, were you employed by the East Lyme Police Department and working as an officer?
Yes, I was.
And were you working your typical shift that you described, evening patrol shift?
Yes, I was.
Okay. And what was the context in which you encountered the applicant?
I was sitting on the side of a, it's a busier road in our town, a lot of through traffic. Running, using a handheld laser to run laser and get the speeds of vehicles up and through there. We have a lot of complaints. We have a ton of accidents to that area, so it's good to get some boots on the ground, get some lights going, get some traffic stops going, try to slow down traffic and let people understand, a little reminder of speeds. Observed the
appellant.
Appellant, thank you. The appellant vehicle. Later identified him as a passenger. They were traveling northbound on Flanders Road at a speed of approximately 46 miles an hour in a 35 mile per hour zone. Any time of day to be going in that speed is a little excessive in that area, just again, the accidents, the heavy congestion of traffic. Conducted a motor vehicle stop on the vehicle.
Well, let me stop you there. I want to ask, you noticed the vehicle, you recorded the speed.
Correct.
Did you notice anything suspicious about the behavior of the driver before the vehicle came to a stop?
It took longer than you could say the normal time frame for the vehicle to come to a stop after I activated my lights and sirens to conduct that motor vehicle stop.
But they did eventually stop. This is not an evasion.
Correct. They did eventually stop.
And so about how far away from where you activated your emergency lights did the vehicle stop?
I want to say, if I can refer back, but I want to say it's anywhere from a quarter to a half a mile.
You can refresh your recollection if you need.
About 3/10 of a mile. I remember doing the Google Maps after.
And in that process, did they go through a major intersection?
Correct.
And I believe you stated earlier, maybe you can just clarify for the board that our appellant here was not the driver of the vehicle, is that correct?
Correct, he was the passenger front seat.
Okay. Were you able to identify the driver of the vehicle?
I was.
Okay. And what was the reason that you had interactions with the appellant on this traffic stop where he was not driving the vehicle?
The driver admitted that the vehicle was not his. He only had his adult learner's permit, but he said his friend, referring to the appellant, was sitting in the front right passenger seat, had a valid license, and it was his girlfriend's car. So the appellant offered to provide his license as well. And during that time frame, I observed when he opened his wallet, the Connecticut state pistol and revolver's permit.
So it was necessary, based on the statements of the driver, that you inquire into the passenger?
Correct.
Okay. And in the process of that inquiry, as you just mentioned, you learned that the passenger of the vehicle, today's appellant, had a pistol permit. Is that correct?
Correct.
Okay. Can you, and again, doesn't have to be word for word, describe the statements of the appellant made at that time during the traffic stop?
So when I saw the pistol permit, it's kind of it's a normal question I have if I see a pistol permit. Hey, do you have any firearms in your vehicle at this time? Just sometimes it's having a conversation about them. And the appellant said that they did not have any firearms on at the time.
And how did that traffic stop conclude, basically? What was the end of the interactions there on the roadside?
Cooperation amongst, you know, just having the conversation, understanding the speeds, the area. They weren't from the area. They said they're heading north up to, I believe, the area of Montville. And just understand that, hey, I'm not out there to hand out tickets all the time. I'm out there to, you know, get people to understand and recognize the speed limits and slow down and to avoid the accidents. It all ended on, I believe, on a good note, and I ended up just giving the operator a verbal warning for the traveling unreasonably fast.
Yeah. Did you notice anything unusual about the driver's behavior after you concluded the traffic stop?
Correct. So they were headed north. They're on Chesterfield Road, which is considered Route 161 in the town of East Lyman, which brings you into Montville. They told me that they were headed to Montville, and part of my normal conversations I have with operators, passengers, where you're coming, where you're going from, part of the day-to-day traffic stops, that comes hand-in-hand with it for me. Just part of the topic of conversation. So they said they're headed to Montville, so I conducted my traffic stop, I completed it, I went back to my cruiser. They proceeded north, and then approximately 100 yards north, they did a semi U-turn in a near a entrance to another road on the right-hand side to the east, and they proceeded to come back south after, which I found odd because they said before they were going to head to Montville, so to do that you'd have to continue north without turning around.
Okay. And did you interact with them again immediately after that?
Yeah, so I drove, I was still in my spot, they came up, I rolled down my window to make sure everything was okay, they need directions, yeah, everything's fine, and then they said they were just headed back this direction, I believe to a gas station.
All seems pretty ordinary, but there's more to the story. You get a call from dispatch a few minutes later, is that correct?
Well, they knew, yeah, a minute or two, a couple minutes.
And what information is relayed to you on that dispatch call?
A witness driving by observed, there was two witnesses in the vehicle, they observed on the side of the road just south of my traffic stop near the fog line, which is the white line to the right of you when you're driving on the road, observed a firearm located in the side of the road.
And what did you do once you had that information?
I was in the area still. By in the area, I mean maybe a quarter to a half mile from the location. I immediately drove back to that location, activated some spotlights and started doing a better search. The time of day was night, darker, dimly lit area, so not very well illuminated, but using my spotlights, I was able to quickly locate the firearm in said area where the witness observed on the side of the road.
Okay. Did the call from dispatch say anything about any behavior of suspects? Anything other than there was a firearm on the road?
Witness further observed the vehicle, because this whole situation took in proximity of a main entrance to the East Lyme High School. Observed the vehicle pull into the East Lyme High School, a passenger, male passenger in the front seat, get out of the vehicle and start running north towards the area where the firearm was located. And then that vehicle continued back out the parking lot south and towards McDonald's parking lot, which is, again, it's all probably within a quarter to a half mile proximity of this whole situation.
So let me clarify, when you conducted the traffic stop, there were only two people in the vehicle, is that correct?
Correct.
And when you receive this information that someone got out of the passenger seat of the vehicle you had just stopped and started walking on foot along the roadway where you had conducted the traffic stop, you assumed that that was the appellant.
Correct.
They were referring to.
Correct.
You said you located a firearm in the roadway near the location where you conducted the traffic stop, is that correct?
Correct.
And can you describe that firearm?
It was a handgun. I remember HK model of FNX 45. I remember recognizing it as an HK right away. I have a lot of history or, you know, dealings with firearms. So, and then I noticed the it had a optic, a red dot sight on it that was pretty well smushed. A couple other maybe little broken loose pieces on the firearm, but it's a metal frame firearm, so it's typically pretty sturdy, so it's not your composite frame, but it still had some areas that were broken.
Okay, was this handgun loaded or unloaded?
It was loaded.
And you earlier mentioned that this was very close to one of the entrances to the East Lyme High School. Is this a place where you expect to just find a firearm in the road?
No.
What else is present in that immediate vicinity? I mean, just describe the character of, say, that block.
So within, we'll put it 100 yards radius. If you go north slightly, you have multiple residences. There's a major crosswalk in that intersection where kids actually commute on foot into the high school. You have a subway, a mortgage and realtor business. You have McDonald's across the street. You have a restaurant, Flanders Fish House, which is, you know, everywhere families to anybody eats there. Just next to that, you have a pizza place. Just next to that, you have a gas station that's 24 hours. A CVS, a grocery store. It's a fairly busy area.
So then, what did you do with this pistol? You recovered?
I secured it in the front seat of my vehicle quickly, and then proceeded from there.
Okay. I'm going to do a little bit of a time skip here. Did you, sometime after that night, review the dash cam footage from your cruiser and watch this traffic stop again?
I did.
And did you notice anything watching the dash cam video that you didn't notice live the night that you conducted the stop?
Correct. So when I was traveling north, activated lights and sirens, at some point during that time in the proximity of the stop, I noticed a flash on my dash cam from the passenger side of the vehicle that the appellant was in.
Okay. Was there anything else? Was there a sound that you observed while you were watching the dash cam?
So when I was driving, hence the damage to the firearm, is I heard a thump-thump with my passenger side tires near that fog line area, and I recognized that immediately when I did that, thinking it was road debris, which is not unlikely in that area. A lot of down limbs and stuff happen in there, a lot of trees. So that's what I immediately thought, tree, didn't think of it being a firearm. And then later, after reviewing the body cam or the dash cam footage and reviewing the area where it was located and putting together the noise of the tires, I realized that was my vehicle running over the firearm and not anything else.
Okay, so let's go back to that night of the investigation. You've secured the firearm. What did you do next? How did the investigation proceed from there?
Well, as mentioned before, the witness observed the vehicle after it dropped off the appellant, or assumed to be the appellant because there was nobody else in the vehicle at the East Lyme High School. The vehicle pulled into the McDonald's parking lot, and so I secured the firearm, drove towards the McDonald's parking lot, immediately located the vehicle in the drive-thru of the parking lot, activating my cameras and everything again, and then conducted a stop on the vehicle there and ordered the operator out in a felony stop type of situation, which is with my issued firearm drawn.
Okay. And did other members of your department eventually locate the appellant?
Soon after securing the driver, members of my department, members of Troop B, showed up to the area with a canine as well to start doing a search for the area, heading north to where the appellant was last known to be on foot. At some point, I don't remember the exact time frame, I'm standing near the front of McDonald's and I happen to see the appellant starting to walk around the front of McDonald's, and I was with another officer in the vicinity, and then the appellant was prone out again at a felony type stop situation with my duty issue firearm drawn.
So that night, did the appellant make any statements that explained the location of that firearm in the roadway?
He said he had messed up, something along that line. Refer back to the exact quote. The appellant mentioned that he admitted it was stupid of him to throw the gun out the window, but he was afraid to get his friend in trouble.
Why was he afraid to get his friend in trouble?
His friend was a convicted felon and not allowed to have firearms in the same vehicle as him.
Was anything else found along the roadway that night?
A secondary search after securing the first firearm that was later determined to be registered to the appellant. The secondary search, this is after securing both the appellant and the operator of the vehicle. Myself, other officers, and a canine went to the area to continue searching if there's anything else out there, and located just slightly north of the firearm that was registered to the appellant was another firearm located into just off the road into the small strip of grass between the grass and the sidewalk.
And that's all just two?
Correct.
Those
just two firearms.
And at the end of the day, common phrase I know, but at the end of the day, did you, based upon your investigation, find the probable cause to arrest the appellant?
Correct.
And did you do that?
Yes.
Viewing the situation as a whole, had it not been for that caller, what kind of risks were created by the appellant's actions that night?
Had they not went back and found said firearms, then I would imagine the next morning, where again it's heavily populated with kids commuting to and from school or people walking across the street, kids or teachers walking across the street to go to Subway, grab lunch, I would imagine at some point or another those firearms would have been located, assuming by a juvenile, considering it's mostly trafficked on foot by kids through there.
And earlier you mentioned familiarity with safe handling, safe storage of firearms. Did the appellant exhibit safe handling, safe storage of firearms on that night?
No, he did not.
Do you believe that the appellant's actions are consistent with the judgment required to hold a pistol permit?
I personally do not.
Thank you. I've got no further questions.
Could you tell me again the date of this?
October 26, 2022. I'm looking at the numbers above it too.
August 26th.
Do you have any questions to ask?
No, just like I said that night. This is your time to ask questions. If you have a question of the witness, you can ask it. You'll get your chance later to explain your side of the story.
No questions for you. He handled the situation fine with me after.
No questions.
The board have any questions?
I don't know.
No questions?
Yes.
Okay. Officer, when you found the gun, and you said the optical sight was broken on the gun.
Correct.
Okay. Did you notice any debris on the gun, like mud or grass or anything like that?
Not the appellant's firearm, because it was on the road. Mm-hmm. So there might have been like a little moisture from the road itself, but there was scratches consistent with pavement, harder, not smooth surfaces.
Right. Yeah. That
being
that's,
the metal frame.
That's kind of what I'm getting at. If in your experience and training with firearms, have you heard of instances where pistols, if dropped on a hard surface, sometimes they can go off?
For sure, yes.
Okay, and if it lands on a softer surface, it's less likely to go off. But
correct.
You believe at this time that the gun impacted the hard surface of the road?
Correct.
Thank you.
Can you
go ahead, Mr.
Help me understand the second gun. I didn't see. Did we say we recovered a second gun?
Yes, sir.
In this incident?
Yes, sir.
Who was that registered to the appellant?
That was not registered. That was last registered to somebody out of Florida, and there had been a long time gap since its previous, since that when it was last registered. But being from Florida, different laws, they could be sold without.
Was there any evidence saying that it was in possession of the two that got arrested that night?
When I questioned the appellant about the second firearm, I remember specifically he said my firearm was my firearm, and that he didn't want to elaborate anything else. I do believe the detective, I forget how the results came back, our detective did DNA tracing on the firearm. I believe the results of that were insufficient. Because immediately when I got there, it definitely had my DNA on it. I didn't glove up at first, I got it off the road.
The condition of the second firearm when it was found, was it in a box? Is that what it was? I just want to be clear.
On the grass. So that had some moisture on it from the grass from what late night dew, especially being in August. So that had some moisture, and I believe there was like a little bit of dirt debris on there as well.
Okay. First firearm found, HK on the ground, with impact, ran over by a cruiser.
Correct.
And then second one recovered in the area in the grass.
Within a couple hundred feet or so.
Understood. Thank you. Yes.
The condition of the second firearm, did it appear it had been there for a long time or not, if you could tell?
No, the dirt, the way the dirt was on it, it was slightly moist. It appeared to be in that same time frame. And from that area and that time of year, the grass strip is small. It would be hard for a student and the amount of students that walk that way, I believe, and I'm just speculating, I guess, but to not have seen that on their walk home from school, to or from.
Were these firearms loaded when recovered?
Correct.
Both of them?
Correct.
Did you have questions?
No. He asked the same question I was going to ask about the second.
He did ask one of the questions I was going to ask. Not yet. The story from the appellant at the scene was he didn't want to get his friend in trouble because he was a convicted felon. And that doesn't make sense to me because he had a permit, he had a gun. Now, what would make sense is if the appellant, oh, not the appellant, the driver had the other gun, and that's what you found outside. Did you pursue that at all?
He didn't want to talk about the operator didn't want to talk about it. He denied any firearms. The appellant stated, my firearm is my firearm.
Yeah, so to me, that means the appellant knew. That's what it sounds like. Is that what you were getting at the scene?
That's what I'm putting together.
All right, thank you.
You said that it was HK.
Sorry, hang on a minute. Detective Johnson?
Did the driver happen to be, did you have a file 20 on it where he's a supervised person or anything with a firearm, and he cannot be around firearms? If you don't know that, that's all right, but. It sounded to me like the appellant knew that the operator could not be around firearms, which is the reason why he jettisoned his. But I guess it's irrelevant.
I remember him being clear of wants and warrants, but I believe when I did the check, because it came back as a convicted felon, so I believe it was a file 37 for unable to be around firearms.
Okay. Sorry, 17, not 20. Back to you.
Any other questions from the board?
Did you have a follow-up question?
Yeah, I did have a question. You said it was HK that you caught that was supposed to be mine. And then
FN, sorry.
And do you have serial numbers on that one?
I do. They're all right here in the report. And they all came back to you as the appellant.
Can I just make a statement?
Now it's your turn.
They may have more.
Oh, I'm sorry.
I don't have any redirect, and I don't have any other witnesses, so I'll rest.
From that night, I learned a lot. Clearly made a mistake. Me saying that I got rid of mine because I knew he was a convicted felon. I knew nothing of him being a convicted felon.
You did not know he was a convicted felon?
Did not know he was a convicted felon. I just know when I seen lights in my rear view, I got nervous, current climax. People getting gunned down by cops. I'm a black guy, big black dude. You see me with a gun, some cops will shoot first, ask questions later. You see it all over the United States. That does not evade me from responsibility, I'll give you that. That's why I did not leave the scene. Try to recover my firearm, try to be responsible after everything calmed down, after the threat of me feeling, pretty much feeling nervous about being around cops. After that threat left, I went and tried to do the right thing. But through that night, I learned from him. He was very respectful. He basically told me, he said, I handle this all the time. He said, people always have guns, like legit guns. Don't get nervous, don't be nervous. I learned from that night, you know, be truthful with the officer. I didn't know his background. I don't associate with that person anymore ever since that night happened. I was trying to be a good friend. He just got his driver's permit. He said, go ahead, take the car. We were going up to Montville. If you guys know the area, Montville is, it was a Friday night. We were going up to go-kart riding. Simple night. I have my firearm on me. It's mine, I admit it. He did his due diligence. I can only say that mistakes happen. Sorry that it did happen. I do not try to avoid responsibility for it. But from that, the charges against me were dropped. I have no criminal record still. I'm a licensed electrician, been doing it for 10 years. I've never been pulled over with a firearm. So I can say I didn't know how to react. When you see all the shit going on, my bad. When you see all the stuff going on in social media, I reacted the wrong way. I should have just manned up, held on to my firearm, and then went through the process. And probably could have just left the same way that we originally left, without me going back. He was respectful, did his job. That's all I can say. I admit fault. I went through court, case got dropped. Haven't been in any trouble. I have firearms, can't carry, but I keep those safe locked. Since the incident, I still participate in out of state gun events on my union hall. We do shooting, clay shooting, so I still do that. Got to rent the shotguns when I go out of state. It's mostly done in Rhode Island. It's done through Iron Workers Union. Do it once a year, twice a year. But I still handle firearms, just not in this state, and can't carry them in this state. I have connections to get permit out of state, but this is my home state. I do work in out of state a lot, but I don't want to go that route. I want to make it right with you guys here today. Like I say, I was younger a while ago. I'm 32 now. Just had a little baby girl. Don't have a criminal record. Just want to say mistakes happen. People do change. And like, I grew up in Waving. Right, real tough town to grow up in. And get out of that town without having a criminal record. And being able to attain your pistol permit. And then getting it taken away from you for doing something that you did personally. And I did it personally. I just hope you guys can give me a second chance and reinstate my permit. I know you can probably hear this all day long. It won't happen again. But I don't have a record. Try to do the right thing. If you look at my history, I've been wrongfully accused of being my brother who used my identity when I was younger. Had to go to court for that, so I'm familiar with going to court. For stuff I didn't have anything to do with. I got that clear with my brother. I had a bailout a bunch of times behind that. The state got no reimbursement for bailing out of jail. I mean, I had bad run-ins with the law throughout, but I do respect law enforcement. I didn't come off disrespectful to him that night. Since then, I called Troop G. All they see is they say, you have no criminal record. You see what you guys say. They don't see why I shouldn't get my permit back because I went through the process of going through court. And then also East Line, I want to say your evidence officer called me, I want to say probably was like sometimes last year, not sure the exact date. He called me and said, oh, come pick up your property, the court released your pistol permit. And then about 20 minutes later, he called me back and said, oh no, we gotta wait. You got a revocation, so you can't get it. So the state released it, but because the state also revoked it, I have to come before you guys. So they seemed like they were willing to give it back, but then with the revocation, they said no. All I can say is I went through court. He told me, I asked him, I said, do you think I'll ever get my permit back? He said, you might, it'll cost you a lot of money. I paid dearly with legal fees to make sure I didn't get this on my criminal record. Some of the hardest lessons I learned with money and how much you lose. I lost a lot that night.
Thank you. Okay.
Do you have questions of the appellant?
I do. And I have a document, Mr. Appellant, if you take a look at this for me.
Well, before you do that, what is it?
And it's the question.
And do we have it? Okay.
That's I believe it's in the packet. Yep. The board. I'm going to ask you to take a look at this and see if you recognize that.
Yes, this is what I sent in with my lawyer at the time. I want to say when the case was going on.
And can I ask you to look at the third page there?
Third page.
There's a section for any prior felony or misdemeanor convictions. Did you list anything in that section?
No, I didn't. Did I have any convictions? From my knowledge.
But you did sign this. This is the form you completed. Is that correct?
I want to say between me and my lawyer, so I can't say solely, because my lawyer definitely didn't have this form. But you said look at the third page for a reason. This one here?
The third page, yeah. I'm just trying to make sure that, again, my question is, this is the one you signed, that's your signature. And then I'm going to ask you, were you ever convicted of operating under suspension in 2018, January of 2018?
Yes, I was. I didn't think a criminal. I probably glanced over this. I wouldn't think this would have anything to do with, you know, a pistol permit. I probably was 18 years old, and when I look at my name, that's all I see. That's coming out in the meeting. And that's my bad. I probably went over this. I can redo this if you want.
So I do have an exhibit.
It was driving under.
I do have an exhibit to present. It's exhibit one.
So I know this is probably your first hearing, so we do have a 10-day rule. Any evidence you're going to present needs to be supplied to the board and the appellant 10 days prior to the hearing. I believe if it's a public record, you could speak to it.
And sure. You could also ask the appellant, which
you
just
could
said
speak,
true.
You could speak to it.
Suspension.
I mean, I can probably bring it up on my phone and look at it. Right?
You probably could. Yeah, I brought copies for everybody. Yep.
I think you can just test it.
Can I ask him a question about it?
Sure.
Perfect. I just want to ask you this. I'm not sure if you've seen this before. I want you to just take a look at that.
I paid $150 for driving under suspension.
Okay.
And I want to say this was 2017, so that was, 8 years ago? I don't understand the relevance of this driving since 8 years ago.
So my question is, why didn't you list this?
That's I can honestly say.
This conviction on your application that you signed, that you said was true and correct to the best of your knowledge.
When you just showed me this, I was like, oh, okay, I got this. I mean, I'm sorry, I can read. It's a driving under suspension. I was younger than, I want to say I probably had 2 or 3 cars at the time. And I want to say, I know exactly what happened. One of my cars was down, and I still had to get to work. and I work 5 minutes from home, so.
Suspension means unregistered car or?
Unregistered car.
No.
Driver's license should be.
Well, driver's license, driver's suspension. I've got two speeding tickets.
Just make sure that we understand, operating under suspension carries a jail sentence, right?
It could.
A potential 30 days misdemeanor, so when the appellant said it's not a criminal thing, it is. It's under the motor vehicle statutes, but it's a criminal charge with a jail sentence attached, is that correct?
Yes, it is a criminal charge. It's a criminal conviction, and it wasn't listed on the application. That's the end of my question on this matter.
And, I mean, criminal conviction, I mean, the charges I was charged with, then I have this incident, still don't, like, it's not a, there were mystery charter, misdemeanor charges.
He's asking you questions now, rather, it's not your.
I have further questions about this.
And what he's trying to do is point out the bottom part of that page where it says motor vehicle driving history, which there's nothing in there. That's what he's trying to point out to you.
I want to say I dropped the book, and my lawyer at the time also dropped the book. I've been trying to contact my lawyer. He hasn't been getting back to me once he got done with that case, so I dropped the ball on that one.
Does that conclude your?
So he used, any other questions?
I have no further questions.
Any questions from the board?
I've just got two quick ones. Do you know where the other, the second firearm came from?
No, I do not, sir.
You have no idea, that didn't come out of that vehicle?
Think about that.
Yeah, I know.
Because it doesn't make sense, and now talking on the street to an officer is one thing. Talking here under oath after you've sworn to tell the truth is different.
I'm going to tell you, I'm registered, well, I was a registered firearm.
No, we want to know, and I was going to ask the same question. Where did that other gun come from?
I don't know.
All right, now, they can go back and ask the other guy, and if he says something different, there's an issue. I just want to make sure you don't bury yourself here and say something that's not true.
Like I told him that night, my responsibility is my firearm.
It's not that, but that's not the question here today. The question is, do you know? Did the other person tell you?
No.
Okay.
The second question, you made a statement that since the incident in August of 2022, you haven't been in any trouble.
I had an incident with my girlfriend, and we had a domestic dispute. Yep. I left the scene. Cop said, you got to come back and explain what happened. I came back, explained what happened. That situation got resolved. That was a year ago.
Back up. You're moving through a little quick.
That was a year ago.
Did that result in any law enforcement action?
Just them taking my firearms, and then they gave them back once the case.
Were you arrested in the case?
Yes.
Okay.
Arrested, no charges, everything was dropped. Just because the incident happened, they said, one of you guys got to go. So.
Was there a protective order issued?
Protective order was issued.
And how long you may not know, but if you know, how long was that protective order in place?
I want to say it was in place until the case was over with.
And about how long did that go through, if you remember?
Maybe 4 months, maybe 5. Okay. I'm not sure. I didn't have a lawyer for that one.
Okay, so and you had to turn in your guns in that case? Okay. Now that's all I had, ma'am.
And then they returned my firearms.
After the, that's all I had.
And I just don't carry, but I talked to the cops, they say you'll be fine because you still have the right to protect your home, so keep your firearms in your house.
Yep.
And like I say, I still participate with using firearms, just not in the state. I go Rhode Island, do play shooting.
Okay, you've answered the questions. Yep. You don't have to.
Yep.
Any other questions from the board? And no other questions between the parties?
No, I have no questions.
And you have no other questions, sir?
No other questions.
Okay. Call for a vote?
No. Brief closing.
I'm sorry.
Yeah. Well,
Colonel Overton.
Did he get a chance to testify?
Brief closing.
Okay. We'll give a summary of it.
No, they get to do a brief closing.
Thank you.
You get to.
Anything you'd like to say as a closing statement?
Well, if this goes negative or positive, is there another step I could take?
So you do have the, if by chance the board votes to uphold the revocation, you can always appeal to the Superior Court, or at some point you can always apply for your pistol permit again through the town you live in.
No.
And go through that process.
Because I talked to Troop G, and they said that from what they've seen, they said, just go back through the process again if it doesn't go positive. I just don't know if this is, like, say, if this goes negative.
You could apply tomorrow. Yeah, by statute, you could apply tomorrow.
And the fact that I don't have a criminal record is...
I'm not going to comment on what happens after that. That's up to, that would be up to, you live in West Haven? That would be up to West Haven to decide what happened.
I just comment that clearly you see the issues that are being presented and the arguments and questions on behalf of the board. If you do apply this afternoon or tomorrow, make sure that you provide a complete and accurate application, including these instances, because they will probably come up.
Even if no, because I called Troop G and they said you have nothing up there.
Be careful with nothing. I digress, but that form has some very specific questions that need to be answered accurately before you get it notarized and signed. Like, have you ever been arrested? And the outcomes. So just make sure that's...
There's also one on protective orders.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And has your permit ever been revoked?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And closing statements from the issuing authority?
I'll be very brief. I'll reflect back to my opening statement that this is a, obviously this is a revocation about suitability. The appellant here did show a serious lack of judgment, greater risk to the public, a risk of accidental discharge, tossing a loaded firearm onto a hard paved surface. It's just not something that's consistent with what we expect from the people who have pistol permits. I would further address the argument that the training that's provided to every applicant for a pistol permit includes instructions about how to interact with law enforcement when lawfully in possession of a firearm, and that training should have guided the appellant through this experience. It's very fortunate that nobody was hurt in this incident. It's very fortunate that the first person who saw that firearm was a good Samaritan who did the right thing and notified the authorities, and not somebody who said, this is a free firearm that I can pick up and take into my collection to use or to sell. Again, a single serious lack of judgment is sufficient for a revocation, but we also have the issue of not being candid and transparent in the signed form about past convictions, minor as they may seem. There is definitely a blank spot there that shouldn't be blank, and I think that deserves consideration as well. Thank you for your time.
Colonel Overture?
Sure. This is a revocation by the Department of Emergency Services and Public Protection. The revocation is based on suitability. The basis of the revocation was an incident that occurred on August 26, 2022. In which East Line Patrol officer conducted a traffic stop for a motor vehicle violation in which the appellant was a passenger. It was during the interaction, the officer learned that the appellant was a pistol permit holder. The stop was finished with just a verbal warning, let the vehicle go. The vehicle did reverse direction, which the police officer found as odd and went back from the way it came. About the same time as the end of the traffic stop, a witness called the East Line dispatch and said they saw a firearm on the side of the road just south of where the traffic stop had been conducted. The officer very quickly turned around, found a loaded FN 9mm pistol. .45 pistol on the white fog line of the vehicle, of the road. The vehicle that he had stopped was very quickly located along with the appellant. The firearm that was located was subsequently determined to be registered to the appellant. During the search of the area by a canine and other officers, a second firearm was located, another handgun that was loaded also located in the same general vicinity, looked like it had been tossed there very recently. The appellant was arrested for, I believe it was reckless endangerment. Subsequently, the charges were acknowledged and dismissed. After that incident, the appellant was arrested on a domestic violence charge, protective order issued, and those charges were subsequently also dismissed.
Thank you. Ready for
comments by the board.
Comments by the board. Any comments by the board?
Just that the issuing authority also brought up the inaccurate appellant's questionnaire about previous convictions.
I'll just note, I do, I believe that appellant was fairly candid. Appreciate you coming and your testimony. I think it was fairly candid, but I think, tossing a loaded firearm due to just a routine traffic stop is a serious lack of judgment, and also is a public safety, was a serious public safety issue.
That what gets me is the, as you guys brought up, it's a secondhand gun on the scene, because that makes it not so routine if it wasn't registered. So that question, you're going to have to deal with that in the future, too.
Okay, you vote?
Now we vote.
Okay.
Call the roll.
Attorney Sinetti?
Issuing authority.
Mr. Gray?
Issuing authority.
Colonel Overturf?
Issuing authority.
Colonel Lewis?
Issuing authority.
Chief Rosenzweig?
Issuing authority.
Detective Goodson?
Issuing authority.
Issuing authority. I guess I would just like to comment, what a sad thing that a black man is nervous when dealing with the police. That's a sad comment on our country. Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you.